You're listening to the Puck Authority Podcast, your go-to source for all things hockey.
Welcome to another edition of Hockey Talks on the Puck Authority Podcast. My name is Justin Levine, and once again, I'm glad to be joined by the website's co-founder, David Sitz. David, thank you so much for taking time out of your day to speak with me.
Thanks for having me.
So last week, we spoke a lot about the NWHL and, you know, the implications that have suddenly arisen with the sixth team now set in Toronto. So, I mean, I spoke with Taylor Woods last week where we discussed the team's veteran leadership group, which includes herself and a couple others who we'll chat a little bit more about later. So a few days prior to Woods, I spoke with Victoria Bach, a former member of the Markham Thunder, and got her thoughts on the PWHPA, as there's kind of two different mission paths here. So, I mean, this week I spoke with Jana Hefford, the operations consultant and really the leader of the pack of the PWHPA, and I got, you know, a laydown of, you know, why it is that women's hockey has gotten to this point from the pioneer herself, who was interim commissioner of the CWHL before it folded. And I mean, she told me a little bit about why she was so hands down to get into the PWHPA after the CWHL folded. And now she's leading the direction for women's pro sports, specifically hockey, to provide a viable future for women, regardless of the situation. Because I think right now, equality is the biggest thing, not only in sports, but, you know, seeing that people can achieve their dreams and don't just have to think about it. Because as we know, it's one thing to see it, but to actually be it is a complete other. And so I think that's where we'll lead off today. So David, thank you for joining me.
Thanks for having me.
So, I mean, you've seen the Dream Gap Tour online. You've been there alongside me covering the Markham Thunder. So, I mean, first off, how important is what Jana Hefford has been able to accomplish this year with the PWHPA in giving women's pro hockey the visibility that it deserves?
For sure, honestly, and seeing what she was able to accomplish in such a short period of time. I mean, when you look at the league and everything, or the organization and everything that it's accomplished in one short year with all the sponsorships and the star talent and essentially the popularity of the sport and the organization, it's crazy to think that this all came to be in less than a year's time. I mean, this time last year, she was still running the CWHL, and now fast forward a year and she's running the PWHPA, and it's really grown a lot in terms of popularity and bringing more awareness and trying to promote equality for women's hockey.
Right. And when I spoke with Jana this week, she mentioned to me that it's not like the two sides, that being the NWHL and the PWHPA, despite that being the narrative, that you're either one or free of the other, that they're enemies. So, I mean, even in the CWHL's final days, they had conversations about merging. They've tried to make things happen to have one league or just to come together. And even through the PWHPA's mission, the NWHL has been voicing positive messages along the way, because at the end of the day, the growth of women's hockey is important. And yeah, it might suck for one side or for the other in certain situations, such as recruitment. But at the end of the day, you're not just growing a brand. You're also growing a sport. And, you know, I think that's the biggest thing. And so I'll ask you further to that point. Why do you think that it's been made out as a two-headed monster, per se, rather than, you know, what it's actually about, which is advocating for women's pro sports?
Well, I think there are two big reasons as to why that's the case. The first is, you know, anytime you have two different sides, regardless on the fact that they're trying to promote the same message, because they're two different organizations, each kind is divided in terms of the talent involved in each organization, and they're kind of split down the middle, really, because it's two organizations instead of one unified league or organization or whatever you want to categorize it as. The fact that they're split and they're not one is going to cause divide, and it's going to cause backlash, because when you see two separate organizations right there, what you're thinking is, oh, well, which one do you agree with? The fact that they don't promote they don't have the same goals in promoting, or sorry, not the same goals, but the fact that they don't have the same methods in promoting their goal. Obviously, both sides are focused on promoting women's hockey and, you know, gaining equality in the sport. The difference between the PWHPA and the NWHL are the ways in which each side goes about fulfilling this goal. So the fact that they differ in their methods automatically is going to make it seem like there's a divide and a rivalry, and it makes fans and spectators kind of think, oh, well, which side are you on? Which philosophy do you agree with, or which method do you think is correct? And another thing I would think that also has contributed to this perception of kind of a divide between the two organizations is the media. And I'm not saying that this is done with the intent of creating a divide and this perception of a rivalry. But I think, you know, whenever the media is covering one side or chooses to cover one over the other or kind of portrays a bit of a divide. I mean, whenever someone signs or joins one league, kind of they're talking about how they decide to join one over the other. And this kind of perception that they're choosing one side over another, and it's kind of like a battle and a between the two sides to recruit the best players and get the sponsorships and stuff. So just kind of portraying them as rivals contributes to this, well, perception of a rivalry.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And I guess with that being said, Jaina Hefford is a former national team member, and she's also had time coaching with the Varsity Blues in U Sports. So she's got a lot of connections that she can use and has been using for the Dream Cup Tour. But, you know, let alone that, she has connections to the NHL, specifically Commissioner Gary Bettman and Bill Daly, as well as Donald Fear at the front office. So I guess with that being said, and, you know, their temporary conversations to step in and help build that one unified league, what do you think it has to take for, you know, that to actually happen, as the WNHL has been long discussed, even during, you know, the successful Dream Gap Tour year on one side and the successful season on the other?
Well, the NHL has been pretty vocal about this, and regardless if they're going to say this publicly, the thing is, the NHL does not want to, they don't want to put themselves in a position where they could receive backlash. And if they're going to create one unified league, the problem is they need to have the support of both organizations. And the thing is right now, if there's not one unified league right now, or one kind of a bit of an agreement between the NWHL and the PWHPA, then the NHL isn't going to going to step in. Because if the NHL is going to step in right now, then essentially it's going to appear that they're choosing a side, whether that be the NWHL or the PWHPA. And that's not a position that the NHL wants to put themselves in.
Right. And, you know, the PWHPA, while they're not a league, they've been able to successfully recruit, you know, more than 200 players for their inaugural Dream Gap Tour, and a lot of them coming over from the NWHL, specifically the Buffalo Buttes, just a few in mind there, and a couple from the Boston Pride, though two have returned to the NWHL since. So I guess, you know, with that in mind, what do you think really, you know, separates them apart from the NWHL, if anything, in terms of, you know, mission as a reason? Because again, both are after the same thing, but what do you think it is that, you know, dividing the two sides, and what are the factors that make players choose one over the other? And I say this in knowing that one has spontaneous tour stops while the other has games being played every weekend.
Well, I think that's just it. You know, the way the PWHPA conducts itself is it is trying to promote equality and basically not only raise awareness for women's pro hockey, but, you know, the goal is for there to one day be a place where women can play and get paid and really make a living off of this and be recognized as the star athletes that they are, and basically show young girls that, you know, they can strive to become professional hockey players one day. And I think the big difference between the two, in that being the PWHPA and the NWHL, is the fact that the NWHL is, obviously, they have the same goals as the PWHPA. However, they're trying to say that in order for women's pro hockey to get more publicity and to grow, we need to be playing. How are you going to grow the sport if you're not playing at a competitive level? That's kind of their philosophy. Whereas the PWHPA wants all these big players to, you know, stand together and promote equality rather than playing as if everything's equal.
Right. And speaking to those, you know, big names and faces, which also connects with the idea of promotion, I mean, these are a lot of players who have played for both the PWHPA and the NWHL and continue to at that. So I guess with, you know, leading faces such as, I mean, I'm just going to throw a few out here, you know, Hillary Knight, Kendall Coyne Schofield, Laura Stacey, Marie-Philippe Poulin, just a couple on each side. Why is it that, you know, why is it so important really just at all, not only in terms of recruiting, but making a mission any more successful rather than one side? Because again, there are still players who've been with the national team in the NWHL, but the PWHPA has, you know, more of it at this time. So what impact do you think that has on, you know, the future, if anything?
Well, obviously, whenever you're growing any form of business, organization, and especially sports league, you know, you want those star names. that those top talents, because in order to grow and gain publicity, the whole point is that you want fans to be coming out to watch. You want to be credible. You want to be known as a you want to be an organization or a league that is up there with the, that has the stars, right? You want to be a recognized league and or organization. And the best way to do that, and a very important way in which you can go about doing that, is by having these star talents and big names such as Marie-Philippe Poulin be kind of the face of the organization, because someone as known as her and as renowned as her is going to attract fans right off the bat and kind of help give the organization more coverage and publicity.
Right. And I mean, engagement comes with that publicity and visibility. And I mean, the NWHL has Twitch and the PWHPA has, you know, kind of a variety in the ESPN mobile app, CBC Gem and Monumental Sports Network. So, I mean, both products, again, they're set in their ways. And, you know, this is in addition to everything else. This is, you know, how you're going to grow the game. And they're both doing everything that they possibly can. But yes, to that extent, after a first Dream Gap Tour season, which included, you know, a lengthy February to March where there were no games, Renaud Defas recently said that there will be a ton more games, which will be properly scheduled after COVID-19 for this year's Dream Gap Tour edition number 2. So, you know, how important is it to bring the women's game really across North America to display the best product as they continue to, you know, find that balance for women's hockey? And, you know, this is whether or not the NWHL has to end up folding to make that happen, as Gary Bettman has stated that, you know, that would be their ultimate way of stepping in the event that Jaina Hefford's side, for example, is the more reputable side that wins and brings all the players together from the NWHL, or, you know, the other way around, you know, in order for them to go forward.
Well, I'm not going to say that the NWHL should be the one to fold or anything like that. I don't necessarily believe that the solution is going to be one folding over the other, right? But in regards to the PWHPA getting more stops on the Dream Gap Tour across North America, and you were asking how important that is. And I mean, we saw that they had a lot of stops this year across Canada and in the US, and they were fairly successful, to say the least. However, you know, when you're growing an organization, this was all in year one. You know, in year two, the fact that they showed a lot of success and the fact that they had the fans to be able to, you know, thrive, getting the players, getting the stops more, getting more stops and getting them in more places is going to be the next big step for the organization in order to further expand the message and gain traction.
Right. And as you mentioned, the next big step that also comes with, you know, stepping stones as it is. And, you know, that's for both sides respectively. And right now, you know, they're within grasp of that stepping stone because both have supreme leadership. Dani Ryland was a captain at Harvard, and now she's working alongside U.S. national team member Michelle Picard. And then there's Jaina Hefford's side, again, her a former national team member, and she's working alongside former CWHL player and general manager Chelsea Purcell. So, you know, both strategy teams are doing everything that they can. They both have, you know, a handful of sponsors that are helping to support them. And, you know, it's really working. And I mean, not only that, but the PWHPA is having equipment provided to them. Hockey Canada is helping them out with, you know, the ice time side of things. So I guess with that being said, what is your dream for women's pro hockey? And do you think that Jaina Hefford has done a solid job, you know, making it visible? Because she's had showcases all over Toronto. She's worked with the NHL and several teams such as the Coyotes and Flyers to put showcases together there. Even with former players, she's helped put them together. So, you know, how important is that? And, you know, do you think that this is something that young girls can really now strive to be, not only see, given, you know, everything that's been put in with the hard work?
Well, to start off answering that first question as to what would my dream be to see with women's hockey, yes, I think seeing the NHL backed league would be great. However, I don't think that a 6-team league is the best product that women's hockey can put on. I think you would need at least, I'd say, 12 teams. I mean, we saw last year when there's the two professional women's leagues in the CWHL and the NWHL, both leagues featured star talent on every roster. And I think that there is more than enough professional women's hockey players to be able to put on at least 12 teams and put on a great product on the ice. I think that, you know, having it kind of split between Canada and the US would be, I think, could put be a great product. I mean, we saw last year the success that teams like Montreal and Toronto had. So I think definitely having teams across there, but even, you know, places like Boston right now with the Boston Pride and Buffalo with the Buttes, they're also, you know, doing a very good job over there. So I think, you know, seeing kind of combining a lot of the teams that the CWHL had and the in the areas where the NWHL is right now could be a very strong and good option for the team. I think for a potential league, I think it could, you know, really maximize the viewership and profits, especially of a women's hockey league.
Right. So, I mean, another thing that I think really, you know, drives this point home is that Hefford's got a lot of different friends and partners who have been, you know, helping out, and, you know, Cammy Granado and, you know, even the trailblazer that is Billie Jean King, she's been helping out, and they've both advocated a lot with Hefford that, you know, at the end of the day, it does have to be one unified league. And, you know, while right now they're separated, eventually they are going to come together because of the supreme leadership on both sides. So, you know, how important do you think that is to have, you know, so many big names and faces helping to achieve this mission, regardless of which way it's done?
Well, I mean, whenever you're trying to grow, it's the same kind of thing about having those star players and star names be kind of faces of the organization. When you're trying to build something, it's important, and it could really be beneficial to have a lot of connections. I mean, the fact that Hefford has a lot of connections to various athletes, front office execs in hockey and other sports, I mean, that's only going to help in terms of promotion and expanding. And I think, you know, especially when you have a lot of connections with a lot of experience and further connections in the industry, it's only going to further help raise awareness and bring popularity to the organization.
Right. And I'll bring this to the point as well that, you know, the NWHL has previously had partnerships with the Buffalo Sabres as well as the New Jersey Devils. And while I mean those both, you know, disappeared for different reasons, I think that, you know, should one become unified one day, whether that be far away or not, that those sponsorships come back regardless of, you know, how far or not away that these teams are from, for example, those specific NHL organizations. Regardless, you know, and I say this because, I mean, we've heard conversations about six teams, as you've mentioned, for a WNHL league finally put together. And, you know, one has to think that in some way, Danny Ryland and Jaina Hefford both continue to be, you know, working within that league. Again, and that's just in one scenario, but for both of them in different respects in both countries. So I guess with that in mind, what would you like to see in terms of, you know, countries? How would you see it in your mind in terms of how they figure out where these teams go, how they separate players, assuming that, you know, everyone comes together, like you said, because it would, you know, have to be more than six teams, one would think. And I mean, right now the PA is different chapters, but once it becomes a league, it becomes a whole different story.
Well, I mean, as you just said, and as I talked about a bit before, the big thing is we've heard a lot of rumblings about how the NHL would propose a six-team professional women's league, which, again, I don't think is the right answer. I think there's too big. Not only is there too many star players that would be out of a job if there was only six teams, but in addition to that, you know, with only six teams, there's such a large market unfilled. Right. And I know that obviously it could be tough to, you know, start a league right away with 12 teams and you or 10 teams or something. And you could argue that, you know, it's not it doesn't make business sense. It's not going to be profitable or however you say that. But if you're going to have the six teams only, then not only is there going to be a lot of star women players without a job, there's going to be a large gap in the market. Because you look at the NWHL right now, which is found a lot of success, especially this season, it wouldn't just be these American teams. You would have to have teams in Canada too, such as one in Montreal, one in Toronto, probably Calgary as well. So if you're going to only have six teams, then there's going to be a lot of cities with big markets for women's hockey that are going to be the teams are going to be taken away from them. So I don't think that having six teams is the way to go.
Right. And you speak of these big markets. And so when I spoke with Jaina Hefford, she expressed how, you know, in those big markets, there's, you know, such a big want and need for women's pro hockey. I mean, the following has only gotten bigger. And so, I mean, She's touched on, you know, the growth and what that means and where it could go next, because even though she didn't deny that Toronto was going to get a pro hockey team back one day, that, you know, in the sense of women's hockey. But I mean, there are a lot of questions as to why Montreal hasn't gotten one, as they were the most profitable in the CWHL, again, run by Jaina Hefford before the league closed due to financial concerns. And so I guess, you know, and I agree with you, and I think that, you know, speaking to the point that Jaina Hefford again made, that there's, you know, such a big falling for women's pro hockey now, and that's come from both sides of the spectrum, both the PWHPA and the NWHL, that, you know, six teams wouldn't be doable. They would need more, because again, this is bringing together, you know, a league and a group that, I mean, really many could reference to as a league, with so many chapters and teams having played so many different tour stops this season. And I think that, you know, they're on the right track, and Jane has done so much, and she's even had, you know, the Tragically Hip come out as a supreme partner, in addition to, you know, Kemi Granato as a guest coach, Billie Jean King as someone who regularly did and will continue to do conference calls with them to, you know, get the ideas flowing, only because she's worked in the WTA and she broke a barrier there. And so she wants to help Jaina Hefford to break another barrier here, which will, you know, probably in the end, it might in fact draw the end straw for the NWHL to, you know, open things up. So, I mean, I guess with that in mind, as we kind of start to wind down here, in terms of women's hockey growth, you know, where do you think this goes next? And I mean, because again, obviously tensions are kind of heated as players continue to, you know, make their decisions. And not only that, but like coming just from the NCAA to into pro, it's kind of now a difficult decision to make. Like, do I go here or do I go there? And I mean, Sammy Davis, who was the Boston Pride's first overall pick this year, was one of those. So, I mean, what do you think that impact is like on a player?
Well, to answer the first part of the question regarding what do I think is next, the big problem here is I think it's it's almost impossible to predict. I don't want to, you know, say that this year a WNHL is going to be sorted out, because, you know, first of all, I don't think it 100% will, because both the NWHL and the PWHPA seem to be going strong and are both heading in positive directions. But I mean, you never know. Last year at this time, you remember we were at the Clarkson Cup final and at the All-Star weekend, or sorry, the award weekend in the CWHL, and things looked to be going great. It looked like it was at the height of its powers, and then it just collapsed without kind of notice. So we really don't know what to expect. I mean, personally, I kind of think as of now, not including the uncertainties regarding COVID-19 right now, but if everything does go back to normal next season, I think it's going to be another a successful year that's going to see a lot of new sponsors come in and maybe some more broadcasting rights for in the NWHL, as well as more stops in the PWHPA and more recognition from the NHL. The other thing that I would hope to see is, after we saw this year with the NWHL getting a lot of viewers on with their streaming rights with Twitch, I would hope to see a lot more coverage, and not only for the NWHL, but the PWHPA as well. I think some of the big broadcasting companies, such as TSN, Sportsnet, these are outlets that need to start airing more games live in order to help raise awareness for the sport, because it's not just about the leagues and what they're doing, because everything they do, it's only going to work if they get visibility and awareness. And the big way to do that is with broadcasting rights. So I think that's going to be a big thing that, you know, we need to be following along with and see what happens with over the next year or two. And I wouldn't be surprised if over the course of the season, we see a lot more talks with the NWHL and PWHPA regarding a potential solution, maybe a merger or something. And the NHL making some comments as to their plans. And another thing you were asking about in regards to, you know, how hard it is it for a player now to make the decision on whether they're going to go to the NWHL or the PWHPA. I mean, whenever a young player is going to choose, and this is in any sport, where they're going to play the season after getting drafted, it's always a stressful decision. But now, with the divide between the PWHPA and the NWHL, this new perceived divide, wherever they go is going to have big implications on their career in more ways than one. You know, you don't know where you're going if it's going to be around for too much longer. So, you know, you really don't know what's going to happen, making the decision all the more stressful and complicated for these players.
Right. And I mean, in the end, again, Jane and Hefford voiced that while their missions are different, or sorry, their visions, the mission is the exact same and they want to get to the same point. And I mean, they're both doing things right. They're both having their, you know, the NWHL had their All-Star game weekend and they put on a really good product and players. And while not all of them were, you know, national team players, it's still putting on the best product of women's pro hockey that is there and available. And I mean, these players, I mean, regardless, are stars. And I think that the PWHPA recognizes that, which is why a lot of the players who are now with them have come from the NWHL. And I think that, you know, this is, while things are kind of heated right now, this is, you know, this is the part where change, you know, starts to happen again and they move on to the next chapter. And while, you know, some say that it could be 2 years, it could be 5 years, it could be 10 years, this is, and I mean, Jane Hefford is absolutely right in saying that, you know, the time is now more than ever, which is why they have so many partners, you know, who believe in that. Because they also want to see this happen. They want to see finally equality happen, and not just, you know, in the world itself, but in, you know, sports and hockey, which is, you know, most important, especially when you look at the Hall of Fame and the amount of women that have been accepted for breaking barriers in so many different ways, starting with Angela James. It shows you that women can achieve amazing things in hockey. And I mean, with them being national team members, a lot of them, it really just goes to show the hard work and dedication that, and that doesn't separate you from being a man or a woman and what you can achieve. And I think we've both seen that throughout the CWHL season and myself at the Secret Women's Showcase Dream Gap Tour stop. So I guess my final question to you being, I guess, in terms of support, do you think that this year anything changes? Do you think that, you know, in terms of sponsorships, that more pick up? Do you think that, especially with COVID-19, that this could be really telling, you know, in terms of the resources that are there, which might, you know, require the NHL to step in and even for their health, you know, have a WNHL come together? So how do you see that?
I mean, the fact is, with COVID-19 right now, we don't know what's going to happen in sports. I mean, I know right now the NHL's planning on coming back, but we don't know when that's going to be exactly. We don't know if that's going to delay next season. And really, but as well, the NWHL and PWHPA have also expressed their plans on coming back next season. However, we just don't know what's going to happen. We don't know if there's going to be a second wave. We don't know if they're going to be allowed to return. We just don't know. And if something does prevent these the NWHL and PWHPA from starting up again next year, then, you know, maybe they will have to receive some financial backing from the the NHL. But then again, we just don't know what's going to happen. I think if everything does resume back to normal, then it's going to be big years of growth for both both organizations. I think we're going to see more sponsorship deals, and hopefully we're going to see more broadcasting rights for each organization. So, I mean, in terms of exactly what I think is going to happen, I think, you know, as we move farther into the summer and get a clearer outlook on COVID-19 and, you know, each league's plans for the upcoming season, we'll know a little more. But until then, I think it's very hard to predict, and we really just don't know what's going to happen.
Right. And I think for women's pro hockey, that might be the only really telling thing where the NHL might have to step in. But with women's pro hockey back in Toronto, in the sense of the NWHL's sixth team here, with, you know, now eight players having signed, six of them from the PWHPA, I think that this is, you know, only going to garner that support more, and that, you know, that putting the best product on display with some of these great talents, such as, you know, Cheyenne D'Arcangelo, Taylor Woods, Kelly Babstock, who is a former Buffalo Butte, and now after a stint with the PWHPA is back in the league with the expansion team in Toronto. And that's just to name a few, with Emma Greco and Elaine Chuli from there. I mean, that's only going to drive the point home more that, you know, this is the time to back these women and to be there in every way that they can fill arenas. And I mean, well, I've learned that an arena announcement is nearing for the Toronto NWHL team. There's still work to be done. And, you know, Jana Hefford's only, I mean, she said to me that scheduling is going to continue for the Dream Gap Tour. And yes, COVID-19 is, you know, playing a role in, you know, delaying it. But, you know, once they get the clearance to be able to do so, they're going to. There will be more stops this season, which she confirmed. And I mean, it's not going to stop the progress of the PWHPA, because at the end of the day, growing women's pro hockey more so than ever now is so important, and it's so crucial because these players, you know, they shouldn't be playing the Dream Gap Tour for, you know, let's say, for example, the next 5 years without getting paid. That's a lot of, you know, traveling, a lot of resources coming out of their own pockets. And with their amounts of talents, you know, that's not equality. And I think that this is the time for change now. So with the NHL having started that route with the Elite Women's 3-on-3 game, given Hevard's work and that partnership, do you see a future where women's hockey can become a career choice for women?
I mean, I do. I mean, you look right now, and it's very rare that, you know, women could focus on playing hockey and only that. I mean, last year, after the CWHL Clarkson Cup final, we spoke to a bunch of the players who talked about, you know, how they have a lot of day jobs, but there were a couple players, but very rarely, that are able to make a living off of playing hockey, as the national team will pay for their training and that kind of stuff. But that's very rare. Most players do not have that luxury. So I think that with all the growth we've seen with just over the past year, especially with the PWHPA and the NWHL's growth as well, I think there is a future for women's hockey, and a big one at that. And I think that in the future, women's hockey will become a viable job for these young players.
Right. And I mean, they put in, you know, ridiculous hours in the gym, on the ice every day. They wake up early, and, you know, they shouldn't be having to, you know, work late at practices after 9-to-5 day jobs or whatever it is they might be coming from, because it's different for every player. And I think that's something that, you know, Jane has touched a lot on, that, you know, again, this is the time where we grow the game and change that narrative, because, you know, that's, again, it's not right. And these players are exhausted. And you know what? They're watching NHL players get, you know, millions, and they're not getting anything close to that. They were getting stipends in the CWHL of, you know, 10K or even under that, which is frankly unacceptable for their talents. So I think that this, again, is so, so important, and something that Jaina has really reiterated and will continue to work on this season for edition number two of the Dream Gap Tour. So with that in mind, I'm going to throw this now to my interview with Jaina Hefford. But with that being said, David, thank you so much. And in advance, Jaina, if you are listening, you are an absolute joy to have on. So to all our Puck Authority listeners, thank you for joining this week's episode, and enjoy this week's interview with Canadian Olympian and operations consultant Jaina Hefford.
Speaking now with Jaina Hefford, operations consultant for the PWHPA, let me start off by congratulating you on all the success the PA had this year. So I'll start off easy by asking you, if I may, what has this experience been like in light of the gap year for women's pro hockey?
Obviously this year was a really successful season in our minds. It was challenging in many ways. It was exciting. I think it was inspirational. I think we've learned a lot, and just look forward to continuing to create some momentum for the women's game. And our players did a really great job of really telling our mission and explaining what this is all about, and being really accessible to people to share that story. So I think overall it was very successful.
And before we really dig in today, you know, with all the success this season, the reason I asked you on today is in lieu of the Toronto expansion team, which was unveiled for season 6 on April 22nd. So, I mean, this came after a report that that suggested the week prior that a team in the city was being formed. So, I mean, given your position of leadership with the PWHPA, what were your initial thoughts from a personal standpoint as the announcement came down?
Well, you know, I don't think we were surprised by it. You know, first and foremost, Toronto is an incredible hockey market, if not the best hockey market in the world. So I can see why any league would want to be in Toronto. And secondly, I think, you know, it was clear after the CWHL folded that the league had an interest in bringing a team here. So not surprised by it. And really, it doesn't change anything we're trying to accomplish. We're not against the league or anything. We just, our mission and our vision for the future of the game is a little bit different, and we'll continue to go down that path.
Right, and obviously, as the former interim commissioner of the CWHL, now with it having folded just over a year ago, can you share with me 1 year later how it is that we got from the CWHL to where we are now with the women's game after 12 years of operation?
Yeah, I think, you know, I can speak to just professional women's hockey in general from my personal experience. And, you know, over the course of my 17-year career, I played in three different versions of what we would call professional leagues. And I don't know if we can call them professional leagues, you know, what the definition of that is, if it's because I played many years in these leagues where there was no salaries. There wasn't a lot of resources. So I played in the Central Ontario Women's Hockey League. I played in the original Canadian National Women's Hockey League, and then on to the CWHL, and of course finished with, as the interim commissioner. So, you know, I think over the course of my career, I just saw not a lot of change over that course of time. And, you know, from early on in my days, I played on a team in Brampton that had private ownership, and we had a pretty good scenario with facilities and the way we were treated. Still no salaries, but we had some resources available and it was great, but that didn't survive either. So I have been part of leagues that have private ownership and part of leagues that are centrally funded. And as I said, it just there hasn't been enough change over 20 years of professional women's hockey. And I think that's what's brought us to this point, is that until there's a real true investment made in the sport, we're just going to continue down this path of leagues that, you know, start up and do well and then fold and something else starts up. And I think all the players realize that it was time to step up and to make a statement around, you know, the resources that should be available to professional women's hockey players. So, you know, we're certainly in this time that, you know, there's no timeline for the end of what we're trying to do, but our mission hasn't changed, in that we want to see a professional league that has infrastructure, that has resources, that, you know, allows the athletes to play in great facilities, have full-time coaching, full-time medical coverage, access to daily training, and really just be hockey players first. And that's what we continue to push for.
Right. And I mean, with that, you're absolutely right. And a lot of players have voiced this, as we're going to get into a little later. So, I mean, speaking of which, as a result, this has left so many players, coaches and staff with no place to really call home, which later led to the formation of the PWHPA. So, I mean, as a result of the CWHL folding, this led to an act of solidarity, bringing together, you know, more than 200 players, some of which came from the NWHL, then obviously those who were left without a league. So can you talk about the sudden impact that this left on the women coming from the CWHL and just the women's game in general, and kind of provide your thoughts on, you know, everything that you guys are doing to, you know, get that support to form a viable league?
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I think I'd like to think it brings a lot of hope to people that, you know, there is something out there. The success we saw this year, I would say we had record attendance compared to what we'd seen in the past, record sponsorship compared to what we'd seen in the past. So, you know, the partnerships with individual NHL clubs that we were able to formulate in a very short time with very few resources. So I think it brought our group a lot of optimism that in such a short time with not a lot of structure, there is an interest in the women's game. And I think the decision of the CWHL having to fold opened the door to create some conversation around how we support women's sport. And we see this across the board and in other sports as well, but certainly when it came to hockey, I don't think many people are aware of the circumstances that existed and you know, the lack of resources that were available to these athletes.
Right. And I mean, I think that's probably one of the most important things here, and that really came with the Dream Gap Tour, which we're going to get into in just a few minutes. But, I mean, speaking of your time as a player prior, I mean, you were a former member of the CWHL yourself, having played with the Brampton Thunder after your time with eSports concluded. So can you speak as to the experiences overall that you were fortunate to endure as a player?
Yeah, I mean, I had great experiences. I played for one club team in Brampton from 1998 until 2013. Again, I went through a number of different leagues, but played in the same organization. I always, you know, great teammates, you know, really enjoyed my time playing. But when I look back on it as being professional, I don't know that you know, I could call it that. You know, I never had a salary over the course of my 17-year career. We still only practiced twice a week. Some years we were in good facilities. Some years we were in not so great facilities. We didn't have access to strength and conditioning, additional, you know, medical coverage and different things. So as great as my experience was, and I, you know, over the course of my career with the national team, I wouldn't trade any of that. But, you know, I would like to think that over 20 years or, you know, over the next 25 years, that landscape will change. And that when a young girl at the age of 5 or 6 puts on skates for the first time, she sees it as a realistic future for her to be a hockey player and not have to justify it by, you know, saying I want to play hockey, but I also want to become, you know, a doctor or a teacher, because knowing that there isn't a future in it. And so I hope the landscape changes, and I think I'm grateful for everything I had over the course of my career. But I think we're also in a period of time where we need to support the women more, and we may need to make an investment in that.
Absolutely. I completely agree with you there. And I think that's why the Dream Gap Tour is so important. Everything that, given your experience, that you're able to, you know, set in place for these players to put that example in front of these young girls. Before we get anywhere else, I want to thank you for everything that you've done. I think it's really, truly excellent.
I appreciate that.
So looking back at your days with Toronto, where you played only one season with the women's team, what does it mean to you to see the progression of the University Sports League, looking back at your playing days there, which would have been with OUA?
Yeah, I had a great experience at the University of Toronto. I played my first year, I played with the Varsity Blues, and I also played in, at that time, it was called the Central Ontario Women's Hockey League. So I actually was playing in both leagues my first season. And it was great because I was on the ice almost every day between the two programs. But as I went to the Olympics the next season, so my first Olympic Games in 1998. And then when I came back from those games, I really wasn't able to compete in both programs. You know, they started to become greater commitment needed for both. And I really had to choose where I was going to play. And at that point, I had come home from the Olympics, and I was, you know, I felt like I needed to play with and against the top players in the world to continue to get better myself. So I didn't play another season with the Varsity Blues, but I've always stayed connected to it. And I did have a chance to coach with the Varsity Blues after I retired, and follow them closely now with, you know, one of my good friends, Vicky Sonahara, the head coach there. So I think, you know, the university system is doing some really great things here in Canada. They're providing great resources for the athletes. I know the experience that the athletes have now is different than what I had, but you know, that they get treated really well and comparatively to other sports within the university. So the league is one of the most even leagues I've been a part of. You know, from the first place team to the eighth place team, you never knew who was going to win, and it made for some exciting hockey, and there's some really great student athletes that are a part of that league.
Absolutely. And now they even have some great leadership. For example, Haley Irwin, also a national team member with the Riders and Rams, and Corey Chevry with the men's team, who is known as the top scorer on the Toronto Furies. So definitely some great people to look up to there.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, more and more people that I had a chance to play with, and I played against Corey for a number of years, and I played with Haley for a number of years. And, you know, it's just great to see, you know, so many women that played the game at an elite level staying in the game and having an impact. And I know they both have had a really strong impact on the program at Ryerson, and just really great to see the women staying in the game and making a difference.
Absolutely. And speaking of that, you know, difference and growth and expansion, you also spent time coaching with the Varsity Blues before transitioning over to the CWHL in replacement of Brenda Andres, which all came after the conclusion of your professional career. So, you know, while this was an initiative that had much emphasis on growing the game, what exactly was it you focused on, and how did that, you know, pay off before taking on a brand new role?
Well, I think, you know, I had a vast, obviously a long playing career. But when I had an opportunity to, you know, I did some part-time coaching while I was still playing with the university, but once I retired and I could give all my time to that, it was an opportunity I wanted to take on. and learn. I wanted to learn the coaching side of the game on a day-to-day basis, work with someone like Vicky, which was a great experience, and being in a university setting was really something I enjoyed, you know, being around really intelligent people and people that really wanted to get better every day. And I spent one season as a full-time coach there. And then, you know, when the opportunity came up to be more on the business side and the administration side of the game, that was certainly something I wanted to take on as well. And, you know, I think as a player, you don't realize all the work and the commitment that goes into coaching. And then I think, you know, when you get into one of the business and the administration side, you don't realize all the work and the commitment that goes into that. So I'm a believer in continuing to learn and get better and take on experiences. And so I really have enjoyed, you know, understanding and learning more on the business side of the game. And but I'm appreciative of the experience I had as a coach as well, because I learned a lot about myself and about, you know, leadership and working with others.
Right. And I think that's where a lot of this, you know, what you're doing right now with the PWHPA, a lot of where that, you know, kicks in, working with, you know, Chelsea Purcell, Steve Conforti. I mean, just those are the staff that I know and have talked to. So, mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's, again, a lot of what you've been able to take away from that.
Yeah, for sure. And there's, you know, the hockey community is so great. And the people I've had a chance to work with and play with in it have just been so great to be a part of. And, you know, as much as, you know, I have this role that's a little more outward facing, but the work that Chelsea has done and Steve and so many others to, you know, make this whole Dream Gap tour happen and the PWHPA, it's just so great to work with people that are so passionate and care so much and really will do anything it takes to make a difference.
Yeah, and I know both of them do. Chelsea, having been the former GM of the Markham Thunder, definitely a huge advocate for the growth of women's hockey. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm, definitely.
So, as I mentioned, you played with the Blues before being drafted to the CWHL. So, transitioning over just a little bit, with the NWHL previously having offered to spot two teams in Toronto and Montreal, when that was first kind of unveiled, what were your initial thoughts, you know, prior to the PA as to the women's game living on Canada, which we now know will be the Toronto team?
I mean, I don't think I've ever had any doubt that you know, a pro team will happen at some point. So again, it's not a surprise that any league would come to Toronto, and, you know, after Toronto, the next place you'd go is Montreal. So, you know, not surprised by any of that. I believe the future of the women's game is really bright, and I'm optimistic for a time when, you know, women can be full-time hockey players first, and provided all the resources they need to really put the game to a new level. And I'm definitely optimistic that that's going to happen here.
Right, because I mean, you see it, I mean, televised with the national players when they play overseas, and, you know, just how, you know, raw that skill is and how it deserves to be, you know, the main priority that these women are constantly focused on. So I think that's obviously the goal that we're trying to get to. And like you, I think that there's definitely a bright future for women's hockey. And I think that while both these routes are different, I think that there definitely, like I said, I agree with you, there is a bright future regardless for the women's game.
Yeah, I mean, there's clearly a demand for it. When you look at the viewership numbers of Olympic Games, they're massive. And when you look at the viewership and the excitement around NHL All-Star Weekends the last 2 years and how the women have really made a huge impact in those events, you know, people enjoy the women's game and they will watch it, but it has to be supported in a certain way, and it has to be invested in, and it has to be provided a platform so that people can see it.
Absolutely, and that's what's been nice about the Dream Gap Tour being on CBC, Monumental Sports Network, and the ESPN mobile app. I think that was kind of an awesome thing for visibility as just a starting point for what can be achieved.
Yeah, and those are all partnerships that we're really proud of and really grateful to have, and we'll continue to build on those. But again, it's a tribute to the game and that people want to see the women play. And when you can see the best players in the world compete, that's what everybody wants. And so we're really happy to have those partners on our side.
Right, so speaking further to this, from the PW point of view, the PWHPA started the Dream Gap Tour, I mean, in full-fledged force back in September. And while you're a former CWHL player whose focus is, leaning more so on the amateur end with all these pro players who deserve to be recognized as pro with, proper salaries, infrastructure, etc., what implications in your mind does this showcase have for the future of the game?
Well, I think the showcase serves a few different missions, I guess, and one of them is very clear that it's, we want to provide opportunities for our players to train and to play. So that's a pretty simple one. Secondly, with the showcase events, we want to continue to tell our story. We want to continue to drive awareness to the need of a truly professional women's hockey league. Number three, we want to increase the visibility of our athletes. And our athletes are some of the best role models and ambassadors and speakers, and they're generous with their time and they're accessible. And, so increasing that visibility of the athletes is really important. And I think finally, the opportunity to really, we talk about the professionalism of the game, and we're trying to make sure that these events are all, sort of have a new standard of professionalism for the women, and whether that's in the way they travel, whether that's in their meals, whether that's in, having a dedicated locker room for the whole weekend. It seems like a little thing, but, having dedicated locker rooms and clean towels and laundry services and have your equipment moved when you play in a different rink, those are things that have not existed for women's professional hockey. And they're very little things, but they all add up to the way professional athletes should be treated. So we try to do the best we can to make sure that, we are doing what we're preaching, and that is doing our best to provide a professional environment for the women.
Right, and those who went to the All-Star game this year for the 3-on-3 even mentioned how they were kind of so surprised by that at the NHL level for just one night, because again, that's something that's y so small yet so huge in, from a different standpoint.
Yeah, there's the things you take for granted, and we have, we have a few members that, Kendall Coyne's husband plays in the NFL, and Sarah Nurse's cousin plays in the NHL, and these people are very close to people, and they see the way professional athletes get treated, and those little things do add up. I mean, we have a long way to go to get to the level of any other professional sport, but when you can put little pieces together, piece by piece, and continue to build on those things that are needed to make sure that this is professional for the athletes, then we feel like we're moving along the spectrum.
Right. So, I mean, speaking of that professionalism, I mean, at the end of October, it was reported that the NHL was making plans for a women's league. However, right from the get-go, it was also reported that they wouldn't get involved unless needs be. Obviously, this has left rocky waters along the way with the successes of the NWHL. So, with that being said, what would it take in your mind, for a WNHL to open, and whether it be with or without the NWHL still around?
I mean, good question. That's obviously a question for the NHL. I think the way I look at it, my personal opinion is I see the NHL supporting the women's game, and I see progress in that level of support. So 3 years ago at the NHL All-Star Weekend, I think there was four women who were demonstrating drills, not on broadcast, but, when the TV cameras were off, they would demonstrate them. 2 years ago, of course, we had four women that were out, and they were demoing the drills, but Kendall had the opportunity to represent the women's game and compete in a competition, and we all know, how big that was for our sport. And last year, we had 20 women skate out onto the same ice with the men with the NHL logo on their chest. So to think that there's not being progress made with the NHL, I don't believe that for a second. But on the flip side, I think we all understand it's a big investment that would have to be made for the NHL to invest in a professional women's hockey league. So, again, I believe it's going to take time for that to happen, and I don't have an answer on the timeline, but I choose to focus on the progress that I see. And I see the NHL supporting women's hockey, and I see them supporting it at greater levels from 1 year to the next.
Right, I think that's where a lot of misconceptions come in, because they are huge supporters, and every year, it's been only progress. So I think that that's crucially important to the ongoing successes of women's hockey from any standpoint of the game.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I think we all wish things could happen faster. I mean, that's human nature. But when you can focus on progress being made, and I think athletes, that's a skill we learn as being athletes, is to focus on the progress. And sometimes it's not that quick, but hopefully you get there in the end.
Right. So, I mean, speaking of the CWHL folding, the NWHL has seen many successes this past season, which included a partnership with Twitch, a continuous deal with Dunkin' Donuts, and many others. So, if you are able to speak on this, how does the support compare to what the CWHL was getting before shutting its doors, in terms of, the streams that were offered, or, even just a couple other small sponsorship deals that certain teams had, or, whatever it may be?
Yeah, I don't know that I can comment to that because I don't know enough about any of the partnerships that the NWHL has. But all I can say in terms of the CWHL is clearly there was not enough to support the growth of the women's game. And so, again, I think when that decision happened, it created some really positive conversation around how the women's professional game needs to be supported, and clearly things needed to change. So hopefully, I think we have created change, but we're not there yet.
Right, and speaking of that change, when you played, the CWHL was not paying its players. So since then, the league has changed their ways, offering stipends of cash to both players and coaches. So with Rusen International having stepped away, as they were one of the league's biggest funding sponsors, how does such an occurrence play into the decision of a women's hockey player?
In terms of, sorry, how does what play into?
How does them walking away? How do you think that impacted the decision of a women's hockey player? I mean, because obviously that had the league eventually fold, but for those just coming out of school, how do you think that that plays in the decision that they make?
I don't know. I think coming out of university is really a tough time for players. Many universities provide probably the most professional environment outside of the national teams that women's hockey players have and have always had. And this is regardless of any league. I'm not talking about any specific league. I'm just saying, university programs provide the resources, the access, the ice time, the full-time coaching staffs, all this stuff that needs to be a part of a pro league. So when players leave that, I think many of them are unsure what to do. I think many of them are surprised by the landscape of women's hockey outside of college. So it's certainly an eye-opening experience for a lot of them. And that's what we're trying to change. That's why we're trying to create something more so that university isn't the pinnacle of hockey for women.
Absolutely. And now, speaking from a more Canadian point of the game, Hayley Wickenheiser on November 18th was amongst six individuals who were inducted into the Hall of Fame. So, if it came to be that a women's hockey league were in the cards for a brighter future eventually, what would it mean to have her, advocating for better of the game with her face now enshrined in history and possibly being a leader for the WNHL, or just whatever the next, major step is for women's pro hockey?
Yeah, I mean, I think we need all of our present and past members, advocating and supporting and being a part of this, certainly. And Haley has a big name, and she's well known in the hockey community. So, of course, we would want her advocating and supporting us. And I think we even go back this year, we had Cami Granato be a part of one of our events, and Cami's a really powerful voice as well. And Angela James and Geraldine Heaney and Danielle Goyette. And, there's so many former players, Cassie Campbell, many of them are already supporting us and speaking out for us. But yeah, I mean, the women's hockey community is not that big, but it's a really tight hockey community, and we need everyone to be a part of this and support it.
Right, and in connection to the Hall of Fame, like you mentioned with many of these players, Wickenheiser played in the Legends game. However, she wasn't alone as she played with the likes of both yourself and Marie-Philippe Poulin. So, given that you're, again, the league's former commissioner, or interim at that, and Poulin's still young and exploring her options through the PWHPA, what does this say about the drive and dedication of all members involved, and again, yourself included, but, you know, from behind the scenes and making it all happen?
I think, you know, to our point earlier around how many women have stayed in the game. And when I think about a number of my teammates over the course of my, you know, career, most of them have stayed in the game in some capacity, be it in the media, the broadcasting side, the coaching side. You know, many still playing, the development side of the game. And so, you know, I'm not surprised by that because, you know, to make it to the highest level, obviously you have to be pretty invested and you have to be pretty passionate about it. But I think to make it to the highest level of a sport like ours that is still growing and it still needs further investment and further growth, people want to see it through. They want to see the game and they want to leave the game in a better place than where they found it. So, you know, I just think it's great to see so many former players that are really having an impact on the game. Gina Kingsbury is the head of Hockey Canada now. I played with her for a long time in the national program. And so there's women in leadership roles that played at the highest level, and it's really great to see.
Right, and speaking of these members, Hockey Canada has been an integral part of the game since May, and so with the CWHL no longer around, they've provided many options for the players, again, this being Gina Kingsbury with the National Women's Program. And I mean, this includes extra ice time and stints with coaches to touch up on their skills, amongst other things. So, for the sake of the players' well-being, what is the importance of these efforts when you look at the strength and conditioning side of the game?
Yeah, I mean, we want to be able to provide these resources to anyone playing at the professional level. What Hockey Canada has done for their athletes this season, I think, has been really great. I think they've gone above and beyond, and I think that shows a real commitment to their women's program and how important that is to our country. But I'd like to think that we could also provide that at a professional club level to all the players that are competing here. So, you know, I love what they're doing. I think they're moving in a great direction for our Canadian national program, and I think, you know, they're going to see the rewards of that. But I hope we can provide that at this level at some point, so it's not all left to Hockey Canada to have to provide.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. I mean, because yes, they've been a huge part, and yes, that you've done, you know, a tremendous job with the PWHPA, providing that from, you know, this level. So, I mean, speaking more from that angle, Hockey Canada has also set up a series of mini camps across the country. And while those in Montreal have taken place in addition to the Dream Gap Tour, what role does this play to keep players active for the Women's World Championship, though this year we know that it was canceled due to COVID-19?
Yeah, I mean, the mini camps were a great opportunity, I think, for the players on the Canadian national team to get together on a more consistent basis, you know, work with their coaches on a more consistent basis and just really have more touch points outside of major events like a Four Nations Cup or a rivalry series. Obviously, a real disappointing end to the season with the World Championships being canceled, but you know, all of these mini camps from Canada's perspective, I think, are an investment, you know, that's going to pay off down the road. And so, you know, I think they've made a really great commitment to the players to provide them with what's needed. And I think the players have enjoyed that opportunity to get together more often as a group, even in small periods of time. But the frequency, I think, is a valuable piece.
Right, and I mean, they were also supposed to have stops along the way this year in Toronto, Kitchener, and a couple other cities across Ontario. And I know that those didn't all happen this year, whether it was due to scheduling or whatever else. But I still think, no matter what, that was still it's still a huge part to a player, and you know, working with other people, getting familiar with faces, chemistry, and you know, making it all work for the Women's World Championship.
Yeah, and you know, I'm obviously a big advocate of what they're doing, but I would say as well that you know, this has to occur because we don't have the right opportunities for these players when they're not together with the national team, and that's what we're trying to change. So we'd like to be able to provide an environment for these players that when they go their national teams, the national teams know that they've had the right opportunities to be prepared to perform, and we're just not there yet. But the plan is that at some point we get to that piece where their major part of their training comes within their professional club team.
Right. And speaking of the national team and the Women's World Championship, you played in Vermont and, I mean, obviously others with, you know, Caroline Ouellet, Charlene Labonte, Megan Augusta, Haley Wickenheiser, and Shannon Zabados, just to name a few. So during the 2012 series, the national women's team was coached by Dan Church, now at York University with the York Lions. And again, he's working in youth sports and has been for a few years now. So, I mean, reflecting on the gold medal victory, you know, what did he help with the most, and what kind of impact did he leave on your playing days?
Mm-hmm. I enjoyed working with Dan. Dan and I had a good relationship. Dan was a coach that I would say was always very prepared. You know, he did the work to be prepared for events and games, and I think it didn't matter if it was a practice, an exhibition game, a gold medal game. You knew he was going to come prepared, and you know, we had some good victories with him. We had some disappointments, but again, you know, I enjoyed working with Dan over the course of my career, and I know he's had a big impact at York University, and especially this past season, where I know they had a lot of success.
Yes, absolutely. And I mean, even one of their players is now with the Toronto NWHL team, or at least having been drafted, as that signing is still in the works. So moving forward a little, with the Four Nations Cup having been canceled, the Pittsburgh Penguins have been a key partner, as a couple other NHL teams have been this season, which, you know, this allowed Hockey Canada to play against USA Hockey in a week-long tournament, which is another, you know, huge up of the work that Gina Kingsbury has done. So with that, including a schedule comprised of community initiatives, games, and practices, what does that say about the goals that the women's game can strive to achieve, given the, you know, current, I think standstill might be the right word to use, as you guys continue to, you know, garner that support and find what needs to be done to bring a WNHL together?
Well, I think there's no doubt there's interest from the club level. You know, they all have their own initiatives in place to grow the women's game, and I think they're different from market to market, but there's a general interest there that they know that you know, there's 50% of the population that can be fans. There's a large number of the population that can grow up with the game, can love the game, can learn all the great values we get from the game, and so I think most teams now have initiatives in place, and that's great to see. And you know, I think some of the teams that we've worked with, I think we worked with directly with 7 different NHL teams this season. You know, I think they see the value in it. They see the accessibility of our athletes, the role models they are. They see the value in bringing the best players in the game. When, you know, when you see the look on a young girl's face when A, she can meet one of these players, and B, she can watch, you know, how strong and fast and skilled they are firsthand on the ice, it leaves a real impact. So, you know, I think we're going to continue to build on these NHL relationships, and I think there's a number of teams that are very interested in seeing the women's game grow, and you know, I think they're going to be big contributors to that moving forward.
Right, and I mean, to that point, the Leafs partnered with you guys for an outdoor session for the Philly Stop. The Flyers partnered with you guys and even had 4 players do a puck drop the night prior. Then there was the Arizona Stop, where they were around all weekend, including alumni for that Dream Gap Tour. So, I mean, can you talk about just how much that means to have that support on your side? And I guess, where would you like to, you know, go next with the Dream Gap Tour next season? And I mean, have you heard of any other teams to this point offering their supports in any way?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, we've heard a lot of teams that have a real interest, and obviously with the current scenario, everything's on pause a little bit in terms of scheduling for NHL teams, you know, I think until they figure out what's going to happen with the remainder of their season and into next season. But you know, we had a chance to work, you know, in Chicago as well, and New Jersey were partners of ours, and so you know, there is a lot of interest, and there's a lot of teams that reached out to say, hey, how do we get an event like this? How does it work? You know, really just trying to learn more about us and who we are. And So, you know, I expect that we will continue to build on these relationships, and in our minds they're important, because what they do is they allow us to provide the level of professionalism within our events that we think is crucial to the future of the game. And so when you're able to go in and be in an NHL practice rink for an event, and you have, again, you have equipment managers, and you have laundry services, and you have, you know, strength and conditioning places to warm up and cool down, and you have all those, the infrastructure that needs to be a part of professional women's hockey, that allows us to bring that professionalism to our players, and that's a key part for us.
Right, and I mean, talking more to this with you know, all the stops that this season had, and those that, you know, will be in place once scheduling is, you know, figured out, when safe enough to, you know, resume professional sports, and everyone returns to, you know, their offices or wherever it may be. I mean, since the PWHPA first opened, the group has put together numerous showcases as listed. This list including a 6-game display known as the Secret Women's Showcase that concluded in January to kick off the new year. So, as women's hockey history has it, with the motto, if you can see it, you can be it, which we've talked about a lot through the visibility aspect of the women's game, what kind of impact does the work the players and coaches are putting in have on the game? And how soon after the CWHL folded did you know that this was something you wanted to be a part of, and now you are the biggest piece of it?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of questions in there. You know, I think when the CWHL folded, you know, I'd like to think that over the course of that year that I was involved, the game from the outside seemed to be growing. You know, I think the product on the ice continues to get better from year to year, and that's you know, attributed to our players. But the business side wasn't there. So, you know, as difficult as that was, and you know, how challenging that was for me in the position I was in to, you know, have to deliver that message to the players, I think the players always knew that, you know, I was there to grow the game for them and to make it better for them and to work with them. And so when that happens, you know, I obviously took a bit of a step back and followed the players and what they were doing, and obviously supported them where needed, but I wasn't overly involved. And it wasn't until August of last season when the PA came to me and asked if I would take on this role. So, you know, I've always been in this to make the game better and to support the players and continue to grow the game. And so I feel really fortunate to be a part of it and to work with the players and represent the players. That's really important for me. It always has been. So, you know, I'm passionate about leaving the game better, as are all our players. And it's been really great to work with them, and we don't feel like our work is done. You know, we're still going every day, and we're trying to make a difference every day and trying to get closer to that end goal.
Yeah, and I think that's what's really nice, especially with, you know, the accessibility of the players, you know, not just in person, but on social media, trying to make a difference, along with Budweiser, who has been a huge part of that interaction piece. But, I mean, speaking a little more to the leadership side of things, you worked with Laurel Walczak and the rest of the CWHL board before the league closed, but this year it's been with Billie Jean King, who's been a huge piece, along with, you know, a couple other of your former teammates who've taken on different, you know, roles throughout coaching, or, you know, just kind of being a guest throughout a Dream Gap Tour weekend stop. So can you talk about what it means to have Billie Jean King as an advocate for women's pro hockey, especially given all that she's done with the WTA in tennis?
Yeah, it's amazing to have Billie Jean involved in a lot of cloths. They have been huge advocates for us, a great source of support, friendship, advice over the course of this time, and they come with a lot of history and a lot of experience. So I think, you know, the two of them really bring confidence to the group. They bring comfort to the group. They bring reality to the group. And, you know, I always like to tell people, you know, a lot of people, I think, assume that Billie Jean King is sort of just a name we throw around, but she is invested in this. She's on conference calls with us. You know, she's in this with us, and she believes in it, and she believes in supporting women in sport. And it's just been really great to have them as people to throw ideas off of and to get their advice.
Absolutely. So now I will leave you to my final question. The Dream Gap Tour, around the time of the new year, you brought to Kingston, Ontario, which is your hometown and where you are currently living. So can you talk about what it was like to be able to bring that to where you've grown up and, have such, a full crowd of people there to support the girls? And not only that, but Paul Langlois from the Tragically Hip, who came to, surprise the players prior to the games, and just, the all-around support that it got.
I feel so fortunate to come from a community like Kingston, and it's a place I'm really proud of. And I've always had a great level of support over the course of my career from the hockey players in the area, which there's a lot of, the Doug Gilmars, the Kirk Mullers, to the Tragically Hip guys who I became friends with, because we are both from Kingston, and they loved hockey and still remain friends with them. It's a really tight-knit community, and anytime I have a chance to be back there, it's special. And I go back every summer, and I run a summer camp there. My mom still lives in Kingston, so it is, home for me. But to be able to bring a PWHPA game there was special, and I knew they were going to do it well. A friend of mine, Pat Murphy, took it on and said it was going to be a success. And I know the type of guy he is. I wasn't surprised, but to get there, and I remember, the players' eyes when they heard and they saw over 3,000 people in the arena to watch a Toronto Montreal game, and again, the level of professionalism that was put on there. It was in an OHL rink, and it had all the resources of a game day ops team that those organizations would have. And it was just a really special night. The players were treated incredibly well, and I think it's a great it was probably a highlight of the Dream Gap tour for a lot of players that got to play in that environment. So I'm really proud to be a part of that, and really proud of the city for the way they've continued to rally around me and around women's hockey.
Right, and I think doing it at the home of the Kingston Frontenacs of the OHL again was, a really awesome experience. And from pictures, it was absolutely sold out. So I think that's really awesome. And I mean, not that other stops haven't been sold out, because they have, which has been incredibly impressive. So I will add one more little question to this. So given the success of, having done an OHL rink with all the resources in place and, their game presentation, etc. I mean, do you have any plans to hopefully bring this to other OHL cities, whether that just be Mississauga and sell out a crowd there, or London, or whatever it may be?
Yeah, and we've actually had recent interest from a few OHL clubs to start some conversations on next season. So I hope this is something that does pick up. And I think when people see it's possible, and I'm sure a number of the clubs saw what happened in Kingston that night, it's a great opportunity to again deliver on your women's hockey initiatives, which junior teams all have as well. And we're all trying to make sure the game stays healthy, and everybody are fans of the game, so that they'll come and support, and the women's game is a big part of that. So hopefully we'll be able to work more with other OHL teams in addition to other NHL clubs.
Right, and I mean, I know that Kitchener sells out their OHL games regularly, having been there the last 6 months, even during the week. So, I mean, I would love to see the women's game even go to the odd in Kitchener. I think that would be particularly awesome. And again, that's the home of national team player Lauren Gabel, also a member of the PWHPA, and coach Laura McIntosh, I mean, who ran the Waterloo stop this weekend. Or sorry, not this weekend, but this year. So, to that end, Jaina, it's been a pleasure to sit and chat with you, and I thank you for your insight and the time you've taken to speak with me. Your knowledge is much appreciated, and best of luck with the PA moving forward.
Thanks. Thanks very much. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Have a nice day.
All right, you too.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
So that brings this episode of the Puck Authority podcast to a close. We are thankful to Jaina Hefford for taking some time out of her day to sit down and chat with us while home in quarantine. Jaina is a former member of Canada's national women's team and is currently the operations consultant for the PWHPA. She was the interim CWHL commissioner and previously played for the Brampton Thunder. Jaina continues to grow the women's game and is known for her ongoing advocacy and leadership. Jaina, if you're listening, thank you again so much for taking time out of your day to speak with us. And to everyone who tuned in for this episode, thank you for taking time out of your day to listen to this very, very special feature and very special episode of the Puck Authority podcast. We will be back at the end of the week when I speak with Armand and Megan to catch up on the latest in the world of women's hockey and the ECHL. From thepuckauthority.com, my name is Justin Levine.
You're listening to the Puck Authority Podcast.